is February 19th, and we are taping Man and Society. And we are up to the section in our syllabus of guardians. Okay. And I asked you to read the Mishnayos in Masechet Shavuos. Okay, that appears, you see it says in Perek Ches, the last Perek. I should say the next to last Perek. The last Perek, Perek Ches, the last Perek in Masechet Shavuos, mentions four types of Shomer. Okay, as you can see, if you've gone through any major part of Shalom Paul, that there is much more material comparable to the Torah in the earlier parts of Mishpatim, kidnapping, murder, accidental murder, abortion, things like that, certainly slavery, than at this point. Right. My intention is not to spend a lot of time on this. On guardians, you probably learned this maybe in grade school or high school. Sugyas and Baba Metzia, and okay, Shomer Chinam, Shomer Sochar, Shomer Socher, and Shomer Shoel. It's very much commonsensical. Common sense that determines the various rules of what these people are doing. If I give you something to watch for me and I'm not even paying you, you can imagine that you are pretty much free from most liability. Right? You don't have to know the Gemara to guess what liability would you have. He's derelict. So this is someone who is paid to watch this. Right? I'm paying you, sochor, socher. Right? I'm paying you. Here's my ox, my computer. So here you're obviously going to differentiate between something you're watching for me that takes your resources. Something that needs. Something that needs changing, something that needs to be walked, something that needs, you know, right? So, or something that's maybe you have to guard, you have to, you know, keep in a safe deposit box, you have to keep in a vault or something, right? But I'm paying you. I'm going to pick this up in 2 months, and when I pick it up, you're going to get money for it. The self-care is the other direction, is that I'm watching your stuff, and I'm paying. I'm borrowing something from you, I'm paying for it. Right? It's the socher. While I have it, I have a certain obligation. But you can imagine, since I'm paying for it, right? I'm borrowing your car and I'm paying $30 a day. So, you know, obviously we have to determine certain things. Let's say I get a flat tire. Right? Is that because of my negligence? Maybe I was driving in a bad place, but, you know, that could have happened to you on the same day. Did you give me a faulty car? Maybe I have kindness to you. I had a picture. If I'm paying you to borrow your car, right, and something malfunctions in the car, right, each one might have a time to the other. What did you do to my car? What did you drive over? What did you do? Right? Yeah. Okay, and then the Shoel comes along, and that's someone who borrows something, and I'm not paying, I'm just borrowing something from you. Right? Something goes wrong, there the Gemara just differentiates between whether the owner is with you at the time. When I borrow something from you, and you're with me, you're in the same place, so you can't say I misused it, because if I did, you should have told me. No, don't move along like that, that's not how you do it. Right? Right. Because it's that could have happened to you, just as it could have happened to me. Okay. So I just want you to know that the Torah was very, very was scrupulous and all encompassing about the various ways that this can move. It's very interesting. I digress for the parsha of Kedoshim, which is phenomenally just an amazing parsha, where there are so many mitzvahs in the parsha. The Torah thinks it can do something that is just unheard of in the ancient world, and perhaps almost till today, where the Torah commands feelings. There's nothing that comes close to an ancient code that commands you not to bear a grudge and take vengeance. Well, do you think that you could command someone not to bear a grudge? That's not in Mishpatim, it's in Kedoshim, but I'll show you how it relates to this. The Torah tells you about loving, about hating, about feelings. It's amazing. Perhaps you know, when the Torah tells you about not bearing a grudge and not taking vengeance, what is the direction the Medrash HaHalacha take on that? Or the Gemara, or Perush Rashi, if you know. What is the direction? What is the focus? What is the example that the Medrash uses, that Rashi cites, about the law of not bearing a grudge when it comes to... Does it ring a bell to anybody? The example they give is borrowing and lending. Right, remember one guy, Reuben says to Shimon, lend me your axe. And Shimon says no. And the next day Shimon says to Reuben, lend me your sickle. And the famous, all the Torah about why were the two different things? Why not just ask him the axe? You know. Okay, so a lot of beautiful Torah on this. You know, it's such a famous thing. Everyone who ever taught Parshas Kedoshim in grade school taught it with Nachama Leibowitz, who has a very beautiful treatment on it. But notice that what the Medrash HaHalacha is dealing with is on our topic, right? It's about someone using someone else's stuff, right? So, since we're talking about Parshas Mishpatim, we're not just about how to create an orderly society. Hammurabi wants that also, right? But the Torah wants to create better individuals. And mainly you'll have a better society as a result. Notice that the Torah doesn't talk to Reuven about... There's no pasuk in the Torah that says you must lend items to your friend. And I'm saying, if you ask me, can I borrow your car? I'm having a date tonight. And then, right? Everyone knew in the show that you can always borrow my car for a date. Right? People married today who went out and dates in my car. Right? So I say, no, I'm sorry. No. And the next day I come to you and I say, my car is flat and I need a car. Can I borrow your car? So the Torah addresses you, not me. The Torah should say, lend cars, let be free. No, you can't command people to lend stuff. Some people are very scrupulous about their stuff. The Torah commands you not to lend me either. You can say no and not violate the Torah.
But don't say it because you didn't.
Right, it's why you're saying no. If you say no, and probably you should explain yourself. So I don't go around, I get it now. I mean, stupid. What are you, stupid? Yesterday you said no to him. Today you're asking for the same thing? Right? That's why the Gemara changed the thing that was borrowed from one day to the other, from an axe to a sickle. Right? But the Torah is addressing not the issue, it's addressing why you do it. Yes.
What about as a punitive measure? Meaning someone always refuses to lend to everyone else and, you know, it starts to become a problem because he borrows everything from everyone else, so people stop lending to him as a punitive measure.
And you know what? The Christians are used to saying that God has sorted this out, right? And that's what we say here. The Torah wants you to not have him living in your head.
Then, in that case, that would not be considered vengeance, because there you're just trying to change his actions. You're not trying to hurt him.
That's what's commanding your attitude.
Okay, you know, there could be some times where I want to, you know, I really have to be corrective. I want to correct you, but talk to him. Don't let him guess why you're doing this. Here's why I said about the Christian thing: let God sort this out. suppose in the Medrash, it talks about this guy who refuses to lend. Right? So it, the parsha is, comes shortly after the parsha of Nigevatim, and it says if someone refuses to lend, you know what's going to happen? He's going to get tzaras in his house. What happens when you have tzaras in your house? Well, what do you do first before your house is broken down?
Come on, fix it up.
Take everything out. If you don't want the stuff to be, your house to be broken down with all your furniture in it, and your rakes and lawnmowers and sickles and axes, and it's lying on your front lawn, and everyone gets to see it. What do you mean you said you didn't have a lawnmower? There it is, right there. Don't you see what I mean? How could the Gemara say this in light of the fact that another Gemara says there's no such thing as Nigevatim? Well, Hayom Nivra, right? I'm familiar with that Gemara in the 8th Perek in Sanhedrin. I mentioned it when we talked about Betzora Mora, and we talked about the Yoredi Dachas. Right? The Gemara just means that, you know, sometimes someone keeps wronging you, and you say, I've got to teach this guy a lesson. And then what the Medrash is saying here is, you know what, in this particular instance, be calm yourself. Count the blessings you have. Right? And just let God take care of this one. Right? That's all. But I'm glad you brought it up because it does move in that direction.
It's okay. Like if you spoke to him, let's say you told him, I'm not giving it to you because.
No, that Adaraba. Oh, I'm not giving it to you because you never lend things out and I'm trying
or
to teach
you
a lesson.
You're just a responsible person, yeah, let's say you just said, I don't trust you. Is that holding a grudge?
No, I mean, if you say, you know, like I tell you, the last time I gave you my car, you gave it back to me with a dent on it. You're not responsible to explain this out to them.
But that, like, that's what
you just you may want to, just to, but if the, as long as the reason you're not doing it is either because you're remembering what he did or that you want to teach him a lesson. Now, if the lesson, I go back to what Shmuel said, if the lesson is to just, you know, make you better, so listen, think of it. I'm lending you this, but please, the next time I ask you, just, you know, there's something there. It could be corrective, as long as you're not holding back, because the Torah just doesn't want him living in your head. The Gemara calls bearing a grudge to be worse than vengeance. The vengeance is, you didn't lend me your car, I'm not lending you my car. The grudge is, right, I'm here, I'm lending you my car, but just remember, I'm better than you. You didn't lend me yours, but I'm not sure about that. That guy's still holding something in his heart. Right, the Torah is concerned here about what's taking away at your educations. Right? In its attempt to make people better. Okay, so just be aware of the Mishnayos. Okay, it's so simple, it's really so pashut ma'od. It just gives you these four. And it gives various, it makes a chart of the various obligations in Chiyuv. And it stands to, it's so common sense. Just one or two of them, you might not figure out on your own, like the Shoel, that he's potter if the owner is with him. Yeah, because if you thought I wasn't driving this properly, you should have told me. Right? That broken glass I drove over that gave a flat tire, you could have driven over that too. And then, I mean, you know, I didn't see it. You probably wouldn't have seen it. So, okay.
Yeah, but if you're a passenger in a car, you have much less responsibility than a driver of a car, you know? Like, you're allowed to take a little bit of a nap.
I hear you.
I guess it's just that
in such a case, if the owner is there, the guy who's borrowing it, of course, by another example, because why are you with me? You know,
right.
You could drive. But anyway, if the owner is there, he has less of an excuse. Because here's the point: if the owner is not there, how do we know how this damage came? Are you negligent? Are you not? You know. You know what I'm saying? If I borrow your car, and it's a relatively new car, and it overheats, this never happened to me. Okay?
You're even high for all that stuff. Or you're acting beyond your control for a show.
Yeah, but I'm sensing differences if the owner is there with him or not. Yeah, no, I mean, if he's not there, then yeah, for sure. not paying me to borrow this thing. You're responsible for it as if though it's yours. Right? Okay. All right. Okay, so we're going to move on to Pasuk Tesva, please. Okay, you throw it to me in the pages if you have it. Now that I have a couple extras here. Throw it to me in the pages. Pasuk Tesva.
Which paragraph
now? Beis Pasuk Tesvav. We're almost finished with the casuistic section. Chiyafate ish besula asher lo orasa. Obvious implication of this is something Shmos hasn't dealt with yet, but Dvarim will. Is that if you seduce a woman who is engaged, right? Then that's a serious crime. Right, steal for that. Right? Why is the punishment for taking an engaged woman more serious than punishment for taking a married woman? Just for your information, an engaged woman is someone who already got a ring. Someone already told her right that she's about to do this motion trial. But in the ancient world, they used to, it's the time of the Gemara, there used to be some time period between that event and the actual chuppah, which is Sheva Brachos, and he takes her into his home for her to prepare for her dowry and other things like that. Today, for various reasons, already since the Middle Ages, we do both of those under the chuppah, but we, in order to indicate that those are two different events, we have two different cups of wine for those two. Right? And since the Sabbath Kedushin used to say the Sheva Brachos, right? But now there's a minute to get on the Sheva Brachos, someone gets the first two together. You see that? Not just Brit Gavin, but that he says that the Shulchan Kol Baruch Kodo also. What's the name? Why does he have to say two? Because if it's the Sabbath Kedushin saying those Brachos, he should at least get the two because he just made a Brit Gavin 5 minutes ago, or 25 minutes ago if he's giving a long speech, but. But there's no Esekhata. He's right there under the same chuppah. Why do you think two brachas one after the other to show that it's two different ceremonies? But the fact is, if it's a different person saying the bracha, you know, nothing wrong with one person saying it alone. That's some of the chachma that goes into that gilas at a wedding when someone says that. The first two brachas will be recited by, you know, you see that? Okay, v'chi yifatzei ish besula. The key is here that she's a besula. Okay. A shelo or rasa, she's not engaged, she's a besula, she's right. B'shachav ima, and he slept with her. Now chiyafateh means that this is not violent. Talked her into it, right? Pitui means, you see when Yirmiyahu uses this terminology, he says to God, Ribon Shalom, he says, Pitisani Hashem va'epos. You seduced me into becoming another. I never wanted it. He complains about all that's happening. You promised me that they would protect me. Right? Okay. There it probably means that you cajoled me. Maybe there's a better word to use for that. Yirmiyahu does use that word. Tisani Hashem v'epos. Yirmiyahu perkof pasuk zayin. Alright, so v'shachavim, when he sleeps with her, mohor yim harena lo le'isha. Mohor yim harena lo leisha. The word mohar is a strange Hebrew word, but it means the bride price. Right? If you would translate the ksuva exactly as it's written at a wedding, under a chuppah at the wedding, it would be very, very, very funny if people would lunch at it.
Why?
Because he's constantly referring to the virgin bride price. You know, five camels and four sheep and 300 silver pieces. Some smart exuvas actually include those things. They write them on, they give them a certain amount of animals and a certain amount of. Right? Anyway, so it says, Marhor Yimaren the Lola Isha. Okay, now, clearly, what is the Torah doing here? Can you think of a nice aphorism? You made your bed, you got to sleep in it now. Alright? But he said, I didn't have marriage in mind. The Torah, in its infinite wisdom, is telling us something that every study, there was recently another one that came out, I think I read it in the Wall Street Journal this past week, is that men and women who are single view the sexual act differently. For obvious reasons. The woman may conceive from this. Right? But the woman is thinking of companionship, of making a relationship, of motherhood. Maybe this will lead to a family situation. Right? The man is thinking the moment. What? This is not news to anybody. Okay? So, Torah is saying to this guy, wake up, mister. Right? If you want this momentary situation, be careful, because this can turn into a life situation. Don't get involved in the momentary situation unless you're ready for B. The problem is that women, if women allow themselves to be seduced too much, right? Then, the men will take advantage. Okay? All the women say, don't touch me until you marry me. See a lot more marriages. You see, there's this amazing chachma that goes into this pasuk. Right? It acknowledges there's lots of that going on among single people. Right? But I tell you this, if she wants, the cards are in her hand. Right? If she wants, you have to stay married to her for the rest of your life. Sound like a little like a Meatloaf song that you know? Maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just needed this. Wait, but is there a side for like, it's totally up to her?
That's based on rabbinic exegesis. We don't know that.
Oh, okay.
Possibly her father. We'll see that in Parshas Kisetze also.
Well, otherwise there's no...
Yeah, but the Gemara says that even for when the girl is taken against her will, and she's kicking and screaming.
Then if she wants.
So don't do it this way, please. I like you too, but let's get married. Come on, let's... Right? Like the way Tamar talks to Amnon in Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel. She tells him in the middle of the story, you don't do things like this in Israel. I'm a Besula. According to Tosfos, they're step siblings. I'll marry you. Just don't do it this way. According to the simple pshat of the pasuk, they seem to be half siblings. Right? The simple pshat of the story is they keep calling each other brother, sister. Sleep with me, my sister. Don't do this, brother. It's the text's way of showing how despicable the act is. Right? Coming right off the heels of the story of Bathsheba as part of the punishment that the prophet Nathan spoke to David about. Right? You know what I'm saying? So she's saying, in the parak, he says, speak to father about this. He won't keep you from me. I'll marry you. Right? Bravanel in this paper says that she was stalling for time, hoping that if he does ask for her hand, that she'll show the daughter, please, daddy, please, I don't want him. He's despicable. I hate him. And by that time, David will say, if I ever see you within 1 mile of her, you'll never be the next king. This is his oldest son. Right? David could show him the door quickly about that. But, Amnon is out of control. He's used to getting what he wants. No one can rebuke him. His best friend probably doesn't want him to do this, but can't tell him any other thing. Right? So, you know the story I'm talking about, right? Which is more better. So when it comes to taking a single woman, even against her will, even if she may want you, but not this way. Don't do this. Let's get married. Right? So, I'm just trying to explain why a woman would even think of wanting to take a man who would force her. Right? But if it's so, follow what I'm saying? Most women would spy such a man. So if she doesn't want him, then he has to pay a fine. Right? But if she wants him, yeah? Because most men who would force a woman, that's the only way they want her. Gemara says this in the second paragraph in Sanhedrin. What happened to Amnon after he had his way with her? He says he hated her more than his infatuation and love for her was. How could that turn so quickly? Anyone know the Gemara? I know where I'm taking now, but watch that. He's end of saying something that's in the Gemara. Remember Amnon and Tamar, the example of Pirkei Avos of Ahava, Atuluya Bedavar, Batlo Hadavar, Batlo Ahava. Right? Pirkei Avos, no? Yeah. Who's the case of Ahava She'ena Tuluya Bedavar? Please, come on, someone tell me. Ahava She'ena Tuluya Bedavar. Tamar and Amnon, Ahava Tuluya Bedavar. Who is it? David Yonatan. Good. So, Butla ha dover, butla ha hava. What was butla? Anyone know what Mar says? Mar says she, let's say, she did something to assure he could never do this to anybody else. Right? So he hated her more than he loved her because it was butla ha dover. Sorry, pal, you're never doing this to me nor to anyone else. Right?
Okay, use your imagination, please.
And Gemara even tells us how she did it. Hey, you're on your own, guys. Have a call from the Sefer Sanhedrin. Okay, so here the Torah, in its infinite wisdom, is warning the guys. You view the sexual act differently than Romeo views it differently than Juliet. I am telling you to look. The reason why men and women view this differently could be something, and the Rav wrote about this, about the difference between what Mordechai and Esther try to solve the problem that Haman is doing, is that men are very technical. They were told, you have to work in the fields and produce possibly thorns and thistles on a daily basis. The woman, she's more of a nurturer. I know this isn't a popular thing today to say. Presidents of Harvard have lost their jobs for saying things like this, that there's any inherent difference between a man and a woman. But the fact is, what?
That's ridiculous.
But the fact is that the man views the moment more. And I understand that. That's why men are more involved in technical things. The woman views the bigger picture more. This explains perhaps why the women didn't worship Diego, and why Esther views that what to do differently from Mordechai in the Purim story, and many, many other cases in Tanakh. Between Miriam and Amram, between Dvorah and Barak ben Abinoam, in the beginning of Shoftim, and possibly even Sarah and Avraham and other such cases, right? So the Torah is telling this man, do not think of this act of momentary pleasure for tonight in terms of the moment. She's obviously got to think of what this means to me, because she may conceive from this and drastically change her life as a result. Right? But you can't just think of this as a momentary pleasure and goodbye, because the Torah is going to, whatever force of the community can bear down upon him for this, is that if she wants, are you ready to be stuck with her? Alright? So why don't you maybe court her a little bit and buy her a ring before you behave this way? This is really evolving. All right? Okay, you with me? All right, let's go on. So then it says, "Ima'ein yima'ein avio l'sitolo." If the father refuses to give her, the father says, "I don't want that shlub." Right? Obviously, what could happen if this was in the hands of the boy and the boy? Every two bit will make himself look handsome, and everyone knows, for Papa make him a scholar, for Mama make him rich as a king. For me, well, I wouldn't holler if he was as handsome as anything, because for a young girl, if he's a great hunk and he's gorgeous, she doesn't care what his standing is, what his moral standing is. She may not care what his It's good parenting to teach kids what good things to look for, but she doesn't care about whether he has any money or anything. So if the parents don't have a say in this, so every two-bit schlub is going to seduce these high-end, much, much wealthier women, and that's it. We're together, I'm actually stuck with you. Right? So if the come to the Torah to say, you know what? The parents have some say. Is there any parent who's going to agree to let their daughter marry someone who seduced them? Maybe. I don't know. Okay, there's actually some money in on it. Because if the father refuses, kesef yishkol kimo har basulos. He's got to pay. You've got to pay for what you would have paid for the nixuma, right? Without actually getting the girl. All these disincentives, you see? Okay? There's really nothing like this in the ancient world. Everybody's sleeping around just so much there. That's part of what you get in in your temple. The initiation of young men in fertility rituals? Come on, this is public stuff. Right? When the Jews started hearing laws like this, in the Midbar, remember what the Torah says they did? The Gemara explains what they did. They cried. It's very likely that what we're reading right here is the most that the Torah departs from ancient law. We saw some things that are unique to Torah. The draconian laws of kidnapping, beating parents, cursing parents. Not one ancient law code had it in it. That's what Paul quotes, maybe quoted Kaufman, Cheskel Kaufman, about not one law code, because Kaufman is much more encompassing. Kaufman is the whole Torah, this is just much too much. But if you Cheskel Kaufman, his book, Tolda Demonat Yisrael, a compendium of an English translation is called History of the Israelite Religion. He says that there's some things in the beginning of Parashas Mishpatim, there's no precedence in the ancient world. True, fair enough. But this is really where it might have moved away from what you're used to more than anything. And in fact, when someone comes to my office to ask about conversion, they show that they come to me, they've been to other places first. But if they really showed already that they're interested, or I get a call from someone else, they're moving to New York, and you look after them and see what they're doing. So I tell them that, you know, keeping kosher is not a big change in your life. Not in New York today. Keeping the holidays, every religion has holidays. Right? You have to treat them quite differently. Right? You can't use electricity, can't get in the car, things like that. But the way your life is likely to change more than anything is the way the Torah treats these things. You know what I'm saying? There are some very conservative Catholics who also, you know, there's a line, Catholic girls start much too late, sooner or later it comes down to the job. So some Catholics will also agree, you know, there's no whoopee till the chuppee, like they say, But the Torah's law of, you know, lo yikrav legalo ser hasah and all things like that is really so far beyond anything in the ancient world, and likely to be very so far different from today. When you dress, you have to change. You likely have to change over your whole wardrobe. I tell you, women more than men, of course, but you might have to, probably have to change over everything you own. Right, so that's you know, are you still ready? You still into this? Okay, so. I'm just pointing it out that this is an area where the Torah really distinguishes itself. Okay. So this Kimohar Habesulos, you see in the Torah Primus collections here, these are some of the Mikan Samchu Chachamim L'Ksuvas Yishevin HaTorah. This is where we... the conclusion, however, of the Seches Ksuvas is that the Ksuva that we write... is a drabon. It's a fulfillment of a drabon. It says in the Ksuba, the chazi nichi midoraisa. You ever listen to the Ksuba at a wedding? Right? The reading of the Ksuba. Most people think there was a little bit of 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 a So that's me. Perhaps that's what's going on here. Well, then why would there even be an opinion? There is an opinion that it's the Raisa. It's a somchu. But according to the opinion, the conclusion, posting site, that Ksuvas is a drabon. So how can the Ksuva itself cease to say it's the Raisa? Right? So the answer is, it's a very, really simple answer, is that Maseches Bechoros, try to tell me in 2 minutes why this isn't Maseches Bechoros, says that any payment that you must make according to the Torah must be with pure silver, the purest silver, known as kesef tzuri, which is 8 times the purity of the other silver that you're working with in the marketplace. If it's a Torah shekel, you've got to pay with kesef tzuri, or reisa kesef. If it's a drabon law, you could pay with other lesser, less pure silver. Now, why is this in the Maseches Bechoros? Because the most eager, very common payment of silver that you're making in a Torah, which you're still doing today, right, is a pidyon aven. it's not maybe not such a common thing, but because in a van, I hope is more common than seduction. Where the, you know, anyway, that I will pay you, should this ksuba be paid out, I will pay you with Torah silver. That's what it means. Not that this payment is made in fulfillment of a Torah imperative, but that the payment that I will make will be from a Torah type of payment. Yeah? Okay, so when it says pay her the bride price of a besula, so obviously that's going to be more than the bride price of a non-besula. It's twice as much. Okay, yeah? Okay, from here we turn to, I'm going to stop here for this moment, but I'm going to want to hear from you what your...